And welcome into the 4 o'clock hour. It is the Gwynn and Chris show here. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr. in San Francisco. He'll be back with us for our Big Five at the bottom of this hour. Matt Scraby's alongside here. The Odyssey Palace Studios. Lovely day in San Diego. Finally cooled down here the last couple of days. Everybody should be happy about that. Another thing I'm happy about, and I'm pretty sure all Aztec for Lifers are happy about, is the Aztecs moving into the Pac-12. After all, the Aztecs have been trying to get into the Pac-12 for years and years and years and years and years. Kirk Kenny brought this up yesterday. It goes all the way back to when it was the Pac-8. Scraby, I know you probably, it was before you were born, the Pac-8. And San Diego State tried to get in then. And they brought in Arizona and Arizona State and then, you know, went on from there. But at long last, yesterday came the news that the Aztecs were in. And J.D. Wicker, athletic director at San Diego State, joins the program. First of all, thank you so much for your time. I don't know how you have the time to fit us in. You've been busy. But congratulations, J.D., first and foremost.
Chris, Scraby, appreciate the time and the well wishes. It's been a eventful couple of weeks, but excited to have this behind us, and now the real work begins.
Yes, indeed. I think all of us could hear the emotion in your voice yesterday. I didn't get a chance to get out to the press conference at the show, but listened to it and just could hear, you know, how much this not only it meant to you and San Diego State, but you could tell all the work that went into doing something like this, and it's got to be very gratifying to get it done.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is, you know, yesterday was a culmination of, you know, gosh, 8 years. It'll be 8 years in October that I've been athletic director, and you think about all the ups and downs that we've been through, initiatives, contract negotiations, COVID, stadium builds, you know, really warm days when stadiums open, you know, the Pac-12 imploding, a national title game. It's just a lot of ups and downs. And to get to this point and to be able to, you know, just have such a positive impact on the San Diego State fan base, our institution and our community means a lot to me.
And, yeah, it means a lot to all of us. And I think I'm speaking for most Aztec alumni when I say that. J.D. Wicker is with us, the athletic director at San Diego State. J.D., how do you kind of view this, you know, development in your mind going forward? Or is it too early to tell? I can't believe you haven't thought about, I know you have, thought about, you know, where this may or may not lead you and the Aztecs. Kind of how do you couch it at this point?
Yeah, I mean, you know, our goal is to play at the highest level, to have that opportunity, and this is the next best step in realizing that goal. So, you know, we'll finish putting together a great Pac-12. We think we'll for sure be the fifth best conference out there, and with goals of, you know, reeling in the Big 12 and the ACC over time, and provide our student athletes, our coaches, our staff, our fans, our alumni, those opportunities to compete at the highest level and to be successful while doing it.
We're talking to J.D. Wicker, the Aztecs athletic director here on 97.3 The Fan, and you just started answering what I'm about to ask, but is San Diego State going to be involved with the process of recruiting or maybe talking to schools about getting into the conference?
Yeah, this is the six of us are, you know, working on all details. Is it relates to 2026 and beyond. So obviously membership is part of 2026 and beyond. So, you know, we've now begun the process of working with the conference office and consultants to, you know, figure out who those next schools would be that we would reach out to and hopefully have them join the league. And, you know, you do that and then you get ready to get a television deal done. It's a great time to be in the market. CW and Warner Brothers Discovery, TNT, TBS True, TV are all kind of new players in the market to go with, you know, the other ones that you know, ESPN, Fox, CBS, NBC. So we're excited for the opportunities in front of us and think this was a great move.
J.D. Wicker, San Diego State, the Aztecs, and the Pac-12. It really does sound pretty good after all this time. JD, I mean, we all felt so bad when it fell apart to no fault of San Diego State's. Just everything happened at once, and this school left and that school left and everything, and you guys were almost in. Did you ever get to how low did you get at that point, and did you ever think you could get back to this point? Because I got to be honest, this came as a little bit of a surprise to a lot of people. I don't think we were expecting to hear this news, right now.
Yeah, August 4th, 2023 will definitely be a date I won't remember. That was a really tough day for, myself and everybody else. I was, I've said it a number of times. I was in a hotel room in Canton, Ohio, as we were there for the induction of, Aztec and Charger legend Donna Coryell. Such an exciting weekend to then, get your, feet cut out from under you. So it was hard. It was a good, it really took a while to recognize that, it was a grieving process that we were going through, but our staff rallied, our coaches, our student athletes rallied, and, we had a really good year last year. And, something was going to happen. Oregon State and Washington State are two phenomenal programs, great brands out there. And, we knew that we wanted to be associated with them, and, we're excited with what we've got now.
Talking to J.D. Wicker here, Aztec's athletic director, about joining the Pac-12 here in 2026. And I want to ask about sports individually, but it's going to be great for every sport within the school. It's going to help everything grow. But I think many people are very excited about the Aztec's basketball team getting into a conference like the Pac-12. What can that do to help move the basketball team now, maybe into one of those programs where people are talking about it throughout the entire country?
Yeah, I think the makeup of the league, again, we're obviously the standard bearer, the Mountain West, but Boise State, who, has kind of been our biggest foe as you look at wins and losses over the last couple of years. It's such a great rivalry. Colorado, but they've been to the NCAA tournament. Colorado State's been in the NCAA tournament. The Cougs were in the tournament last year, and Oregon State made an Elite Eight run a couple of years ago. So you've got good programs, and then it is something that is important. Football, as we know, is the driver within the NCAA, but basketball is a huge component, and that certainly will play a role as we look at who's next as we fill out this Pac-12 conference.
JD, I read your comments about the Big 12 and where that all was, and in reading those comments, it made perfect sense to me why you wouldn't want to join under those kinds of circumstances. Can you just explain? I wanted to give you the platform to kind of explain it to some people to say, well, they could have gone into the Big 12, but you really couldn't go into the Big 12 under what they were offering.
Yeah, we would have been at such a competitive disadvantage. And, some people say, well, you'd have had a seat at the table, but it would have been at the little kids' table. So you have to, by the time, we would have potentially gotten a full share, we'd be, 6 to 8 years behind everybody else, that much further behind. And you're competing against those people day in and day out for those resources. Whereas, we have a better shot currently in the Mountain West, and then going into the Pac-12 to get that that group of five CFP slot, we probably have a better shot than 40 of the A4 schools out there. So we're thrilled with what we've got right now. We're going to keep building it. Everybody we talked to, I was like, look, we deserve a full share. Look at all that we've done at San Diego State. We've got a $310 million football stadium. We've got the best combined record of football and men's basketball of anybody in Division One. We went to the national title game. We've been to 12 out of 13 straight years, I think, or 11 out of 12. Actually went to bowl games. We were eligible during the COVID year, but didn't go. So why wouldn't we deserve a full share? 28th largest DMA. We own our we own Diego from that football and basketball standpoint. So we're that's what we felt, but we weren't going to go into a place that we couldn't be successful.
Not that you need this, JD, but you have my full support to go now around the country and steal a bunch of teams from everybody else's conference since they stole them all from our conference to begin with. So good luck. Happy hunting out there. We are excited and can't wait for this. Being in the Pac-12, it's a great step for San Diego State. And I have the confidence with you and everybody else putting this thing together that, you're going to pick up 5 or 6 other schools, and they're going to be fun, and it's going to make a great conference that we all can be proud to be in. Thanks for the time. Appreciate you squeezing us in. Now go back to work.
Yeah. All right, guys. I appreciate it very much. Appreciate the time. It has been a minute since we got together, so glad I got to spend some time with y'all, and now we'll go see if we can figure out how to beat the Cal Bears this weekend.
Yes, good luck this weekend for sure. Absolutely. Thanks. All right. J.D. Wicker right there. Athletic director at San Diego State, Aztec for life. JD has done it, done all right. Jim Sterk came in, and I think he helped get the corner turned a little bit, along with Steve Fisher's work and Brian Dutcher and the basketball program. But JD Wicker's taken it to new heights since he's been the AD. He got the stadium. I mean, we've marveled at that, Scraby.
No one can build anything here.
You can't build anything in San Diego.
But he was able to build a stadium.
This guy got a stadium built,
I want to know, how do you get into being an athletic director? It sounds kind of fun, actually. I'm sure it's extremely stressful and not as fun as I think.
Can't imagine how many people must be trying to get, leave a message on your phone.
Oh,
right?
I can only imagine that it's needing, insane and needing something and phone calls.
Yeah. But I was shocked by this story when it first came. I saw it, I think I was flipping around channels on Wednesday night, and it was on the bottom line on like the SEC network. I was watching an old football game or something.
I was going to say, what?
I don't know. It caught my eye. And I said, well, wait, what? And it said, Boise State, San Diego State, Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State to join the Pac-12. I'm like, wait, where'd that come from?
Yeah, out of nowhere. Really.
And the next thing, I honestly ran to my computer to look it up and make sure that was correct. And the next thing I know, everybody's talking about it.
Just imagine, in the old days, this is not a shot at you, but in the old days, Chris, you would have had to wait until the next morning to open your paper to see that, and then you would be like, what in the heck?
It wasn't in the paper the next morning. It was not in the paper the following morning after I saw it. It was online. ESPN was quoting sources as saying it was true.
Oh, so they didn't publish
yet. There hadn't yet been a story in the UT. The first stories came out today after yesterday's press conference.
To get everything confirmed.
Right, with this new information highway, as it were.
The information era.
I was able to get it much sooner. But I'm looking forward to it. Somebody works with the women's basketball team. First of all, I like Boise State. That's a top-notch program. And here's the thing that he said. You might bring in some school. Hopefully you can steal a couple of names that are names already.
Yeah.
You know, if you can steal whoever it is, bring Arizona's back, bring Cal and Stanford back, bring whatever. But there's other schools out there. Texas San Antonio is not a household name.
It's not.
San Antonio, though, is as big a city as San Diego. It's, the state of Texas. And those programs there in football and basketball are getting bigger and growing. There are other schools that want to sit at the big boy table. And they've never really been given that opportunity. They get shut out by the powers that be.
Well, I know that.
So this may be a place where everybody can come together. And then, as he said, start closing the gap on the ACC. Start closing the gap on the Big 12. And, make yourself legit.
I can't remember if we talked about this in a break or on the air earlier, but I was reading a bunch of stuff last night, and I saw that Sacramento State and UC Davis are going to be trying to get in. And no offense to those schools.
Yeah.
But that doesn't interest me if I'm a current member of the Pac-6.
It doesn't interest me under the current construction of what Sacramento State is or whoever.
UC Davis has a good football program, but it's not going to be CFP, college football playoff level.
I understand that, but college football in general has gone from 110 schools to about 135 schools. Of those 25 that have come in to Division I over the last 10 years, some of them are pretty good. Liberty.
Right?
I mean, I'm just giving you a couple. Central Florida. You look up, these teams were in Orange Bowls. You know, they've been there. They're not winning the national championship. I get that. But
are they able to do that every,
I don't know.
Every year? It doesn't seem like it.
I don't know. I don't know if there's too much money at Georgia and too much money at Alabama and Notre Dame and Ohio State and Michigan for anybody ever to challenge those schools. Maybe there just is.
What about Colorado State?
What do I think about them?
Yeah. Do you think they're a big enough name?
You went there, so.
Your wife went there.
I know.
I was thinking, like, basketball, they have a good program, right? Their football program is so-so.
San Diego State was in the final game. Legit. Oh, my God. 3 hours before the first pitch, the Padre lineup is out for tonight's game against the Giants. We'll check traffic, and then we'll give you that lineup. Tony Gwynn Jr., before he departed, predicted that David Peralta and Elias Diaz would both be in the lineup tonight. We'll find out if he's correct when Gwynn and Chris continues. All right, here we go at 422. Thank you to J.D. Wicker, John David Wicker. He is the athletic director at San Diego State. They are now in the Pac-12. I've seen some of the snickering about this move from some of the Aztec fans out there.
I've seen lots of snickering.
You know, and there's going to be naysayers to almost everything that's done. But I'm a lot more excited about what is possible now than I was 3 days ago when I knew I was staying in the Mountain West Conference.
Exactly.
Wasn't going anywhere there. That wasn't going to do anything for me. So let's see how it turns out. I mean, you want to go ahead and judge? You shouldn't judge yet. The final report is not in.
Yeah.
They're one of six teams. They have to have more than six teams. Let's see who else they get.
Let's see
where it goes from there. Let's see how much money they can get in TV contracts.
In the Big 12, like, that is high-level football. And I know that people disagree with me on this, but I would much rather go to a Pac-12 that's not as strong as the Big 12, so my program doesn't get buried by these huge programs that we have no chance to compete with financially. I mean, you got schools like, what is it? Oklahoma's not in the Big 12 anymore.
No, Oklahoma and Texas have left the Big 12.
Yes, but you still got schools with major budgets
that
San Diego State can't match. Well, and I think that's a big deal because I don't want to be the doormat of a conference forever.
Here's the thing that that I like what Kirk Kenny said yesterday about it. And that was, if you try to join a club and it had 18-hole golf course and they said you can only play 12, you wouldn't join.
No.
You know? You want to be a member.
Yeah, you want to be a full member.
You're a member of the club. You're not just kind of a member. You know, you can only have salad, and then you must go home. You cannot have an entree.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, you're only worthy of a salad.
Talk about arrogant people. The people at the Big 12, man.
Yeah, oof. Well, that's a money thing, though.
Exactly.
It's all money grab. Everybody's trying to make more money. So, you know what? I say good for the Aztecs, and I'm excited now. Like to see what happens. You know, we'll see. Maybe at the end I'll say, well, it didn't work out the way JD was hoping it would. Maybe I'll look and say it worked out better than we all thought it would.
I have a feeling that this stuff is way more difficult than we could ever imagine to get figured out.
Can't be simple, man. Can't be simple. Steal Florida State and Clemson.
But you said you wanted to keep it. Oh, man, I forgot to ask him. I wanted to ask him if he was going to try to keep the Pac-12 to the West Coast.
I think they can say that, but let me just say this. If Florida State and Clemson
get tired
of suing the ACC
come on over
and say, you know, we'd like to play in the Pac-12, you'd probably have to consider it. So I don't know that he can answer that yet.
Yeah.
Affirmatively one way or the other.
I'd rather see progress than nothing at all and staying where you're at.
This is progress, right?
Yeah. Maybe next down the line, the next stop is the SEC for the Aztecs because of this.
I'll say this about the Aztecs and the SEC. I think we could kick Vanderbilt's butt. They're in the SEC.
I don't know if you could. Just kidding, of course. Vanderbilt was bad.
Wait a minute. Did we not kick Alabama's butt in the game that mattered the most?
Okay, you're right.
In the history of our program?
If we're talking basketball, absolutely. I'll take the basketball team all day.
Darn right. Darn tootin'. Scrabe.
Darn tootin'.
Big Five's coming up here shortly.
Okay, so they have a college football playoff ticket, right? Is that what Tony's talking about with the golden ticket?
Well, the Pac-12?
Yes.
As long as they can get up to, you know, 8 to 10 teams, I think they would still hold on to a spot, yes.
So that makes it worth it right there. Like Tony said yesterday, they have right the now, golden they, ticket.
Right now they could win their conference and not be chosen because they're not the highest ranked team
yes.
of all of the group of five.
But if they did it in the Pac-6 or 10 or whatever, then they would maybe get the ticket.
Let's see how it all plays out.
I know. We're getting ahead of ourselves.
We are. Let's get the Padre lineup in because people stayed tuned in to find out. Oh, yeah,
that's right. I forgot about that.
Tony Gwynn Jr. ought to be the manager of the Padres. He called it exactly. He said he thought David Peralta and Elias Diaz would be in there tonight, and they both are. Luis Arraez is moving to first base this evening. Arraez has a 10-game hit streak. In those 10 games, he's had multiple hits 6 times. This guy is kind of fun to watch,
I think. He is fun to watch.
Fernando's batting second in right field. Profar's in left. Machado's at third. Cronenworth at second. Bogaerts at short. Jackson Merrill in center. Peralta, DH. Elias Diaz, catcher. There's your lineup against Logan Webb and the Gigantes. I like what Tyler Wade said earlier about Manny Machado.
Oh, how it makes him angry.
Kind of makes me angry that he just makes it all look so easy over there picking up those ground balls.
I can understand that.
He does do it effortlessly.
He does. He really does.
Effortlessly.
You're right.
Nobody should be able to pick up a ground ball that easily. All right. 7:15 is the start for the Padres and the Giants. That means Sammy Levitt's pregame show at 6:15.
Slacker's not even here yet.
Did you see the Arizona State football coach last night after the game? They played Texas State, I believe it was.
I think you're right, yeah.
Texas State.
At Texas State. The Bobcats.
Right. Arizona State football coach on the field after the game.
I didn't see any of this.
The guy doing the post-game interview on the field, a little hesitant because there was confusion at the end of the game as to how much time was on the clock.
Okay.
Was there still a second to go? Was the game over? Did Arizona State win? Or was there going to be another play? The guy's interviewing the Arizona State coach, who's obviously agitated because he's not sure what the referees are going to rule and where this is all going to come down. The guy asks him a question. Hey, how about the game? And blah, blah, blah. You came back and, you know, you're proud of your team. Something like that. The guy goes, honestly, I'm only doing this interview so I don't get fined.
Oh.
Just told him straight up.
Oh.
I don't know if that was the kindest thing to say, but it was the most honest thing to say.
Sir, what? How hard is it to answer those questions?
He said what I just told you he said. He said,
He pulled Marshawn Lynch. I'm just here so I don't get fined.
I'm just here so I don't get fined. And then they put a second back on the clock. And then he went stick and started running after the referees. And anyway, it was all over. Arizona State ended up winning. And as they're broadcasting the finish of the game, this was my highlight. Not the coach telling the sideline guy that he's only do the interview to avoid a fine. Here was the highlight for me. Arizona State was led tonight by quarterback Sam Levitt.
No way.
Yes way.
Sam Levitt does the Padres pre- and post-game show and plays quarterback for Arizona State.
You're wondering where he is right now. He's probably still flying back in.
He's practicing. He's
flying back in.
That's true. I didn't even think about
that. Posting a victory last night for Arizona State.
I wonder, we got to ask Sam Levitt if he's ever met Sam Levitt.
All right. He's got the pregame show in about 45 minutes. We've got the Big Five next on Gwynn and Chris. Welcome back. 4:36 is the time, Chris. Hello. Tony Gwynn Jr., San Francisco. Padres in San Francisco. Matt Scravey alongside Odyssey Palace Studios. We got to check some traffic, Scrape. Then we got a Big Five on our horizon here. Lots of good stuff to discuss
we
today.
We do. Yes.
You ready for it?
I'm ready.
Just waiting for my cue?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm like a dog being let out of a cage.
Go. I'm going to throw you a bone.
Throw it.
Fetch.
It's that time of the show when we check on the latest in sports. Only the most important topics and questions are brought to light.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
These news stories will astound and amaze you. The one, the only.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
Guys, the Padres season, as you know and as we've talked about, so I'm going to force you to predict something.
Number five.
And it's going to be this. The Padres have 15 games to go, and they need to win to keep themselves in the playoff hunt. Chris, what is their record over the final 15?
How about 9-6? I think they're going to do fine. I don't think that they're going to have another streak like the one that carried them to the top of the wild card standings, but if those 9 wins are against the right opponents, and that would, I hope, include 2 out of 3 over the Diamondbacks at the end, you know, I think they can still get where they want to go, which is the top wild card spot. I'm not going to predict any kind of collapse. I don't see how this team collapses. 15-2 is a little hard to, or 13-2, I guess, is hard to predict over 15 games. So solid 9-6, and let's take our chances in October.
All right, Tony, I know it's hard for you to predict, but what is their record over the final 15?
I think 10-5, 9-6 will be their records. 5 series left. Giants, Astros, White Sox, Dodgers. It's 15 games. Yeah, I think they go 9-6. That's what I'll finish with. They go 9-6. They finish first or second. And we're either at home or, my guess is, in Arizona for a playoff series.
I would rather it be at home, so.
Number 4.
Just for my 2 cents on everything. Now, I know that we've talked Dolphins, but I do think we need to talk about this in the Big Five, and it's about Tua Tagovailoa leaving the game after his concussion. Now, this is the third time he has been diagnosed with a concussion during the game. Mike McDaniel and the Dolphins don't want to speculate, but now the major talking point is Tua should retire, and his contract is a little confusing in regards to this. The deal includes $167 million guaranteed for injury, $43 million of which has been paid already this year. If he's medically cleared to return to football but opts to retire, he will forego the remaining $124 million guaranteed injury settlement that he'll get. If he's medically forced into retirement, he has a right to collect all of the $124 million remaining. So, Tony, what do you think is the best course of action for Tua going forward?
Whatever Tua thinks the best course of action is for Tua. I love that everybody is concerned and, you know, want the best for his well-being moving forward, but it's none of our decisions. And, it's one thing to be asked, what advice would you give him? It's different to me to just be weighing in and throwing your opinion out there when it's not even close to being anybody's decision. I think in all of these cases, none of it is straightforward, right? You get a concussion. One guy may have 6 concussions and bounces back, and it's not that big a deal. Another guy may have 1, and it takes him a full year to recover. And so, it's always scary to see those type of deals. But I think ultimately the decision will be left up to Tua and how he feels about it moving forward.
Chris, what do you think Tua should do?
Well, first of all, the irony is not lost on me that the guy he ran into was DeMar Hamlin.
That is a crazy part of the story.
DeMar Hamlin had every person on earth decide what he should do with his future before he was even out of the hospital. DeMar Hamlin has decided the best thing for him to do is to strap back the pads and go back and play football. That's what he wants to do in the face of, nearly dying out on a football field. A lot of people thought he should never take that risk again. But you know what? Some people might, do something, whatever it is, dangerous, climb a mountain face or something and have a terrible injury. And they might want to get back up and climb back up that mountain again. And other people might say, no, that scared me too much. I'm not doing it again. You just don't know what's going on in his mind. So Tony's right. This is going to be his decision. I think the doctors are going to have a huge part in it. I think they'll give him as much information as they can. My guess, I watch this guy play probably as close as anybody. He tries to make plays even when they're not there.
Yep.
Including the pick six that he threw last night, including the play he got hurt on. Yep. That was a fourth down play. He knew that if there was any prayer of getting back in the game, he had to put his head down and get the first down. Everybody keeps saying, well, he should have slid. But he can't do that if he cares about trying to still win the game. And that's what drives this guy. Yep. So I do think that if he's medically cleared, I do think he'll want to come back and play some more. I just think that that is where it will wind up. But for me to sit here and speculate what he should do, it's way too early, and there's not enough information, you know, being had. If a doctor tells him, Tua, you get hit like that one more time, you know, you're going to go,
right.
You know, you're going to have irreparable damage. Then, you know, he'd be an idiot not to step out.
Right.
So it's a tough question. It's just too early.
Things would be very interesting to see how doctors handle this, because it determines a lot for both sides.
A lot of money
on the line. I think we're putting far too much on this because it's Tua. You know what I'm saying? Like, he isn't different from a lot of football players who have multiple concussions. I think the issue is when you have these concussions and then you start getting hit lighter and you're all of a sudden still having these. That was a pretty hard car accident that he got into right there. It wasn't like he got tapped. Like, so this is, I mean, anybody who, whether you had a concussion or not, could be concussed in that very same play. I think we are putting a lot more on this because it's Tua and he's had a couple of these. But he's not the first guy to have multiple concussions and come back and play.
I mean, Troy Aikman had, to his count, 8 to 12 concussions, maybe more.
Probably more,
right?
Right.
Yeah, he doesn't even know some of the ones he had.
Steve Young had a lot of concussions.
And, you know, these guys are doing fine at this point in their lives. We don't know, but it's Tony's right. It's different for everybody. We just don't know yet.
Well, Antonio Brown weighed in and said that he should retire.
So. Of course he did.
Yeah.
Well, then
number three.
Your decision's
that's
been made for
right
you.
There. AB.
AB is making decisions. We've heard of tipping pitches, but I don't know I have ever heard of the catcher tipping his own pitcher's pitches.
So glad you brought this up.
The Minnesota Twins released minor leaguer Derek Bender yesterday after the single-A catcher tipped pitches to opposing hitters. An official with direct knowledge of the situation confirmed. The official spoke on the condition of anonymity due to the sensitivity of the situation after ESPN was first to report on everything. According to the report, Bender, playing for the, oh, this is one of my favorite names, Fort Myers Mighty Muscles, told multiple hitters on the Lakeland Flying Tigers what kind of pitches were coming from starter Ross Dunn on September 6th. No reason has been given as to why he did this, but Chris, how bad is this?
Yeah, no, there's definitely been a reason.
Oh, it's okay. So the article I read earlier today, there was no reason. But what's the reason?
The reason was reportedly because he wanted the season to end. He did not want his team to go further. The games had playoff implications, and he was ready to go home.
I'm stunned.
That might be the excuse he gave, and it is a little stunning. Let me ask you this. Do they have betting odds on these minor league games somewhere?
I mean, let me go look. But
I don't know if they do, and I'm just throwing it out there because the only thing I can think of that would get me to do something that idiotic or get somebody to do something that idiotic would be if there's some sort of gambling angle on this. Or
what's
maybe he just really doesn't like...
Well, the question changes because I didn't know that he did
for that reason.
What was your original question?
Well, how bad is this? Thinking like...
Okay.
But now that I know that he did it for a reason and to hurt his team, like, does he never gets a baseball job again, right?
No, he's out of baseball, and he probably wants to be out of baseball. Sounds like I'm gonna give Tony the crack.
Tony.
I gave you my two cents.
I got a lot on this because he's not the first player to be accused of this. It happened. I won't say the guy's name. He's long retired by now, but he was accused of giving fellow countrymen the signs, and he got ratted out by the umpire, who happened to know Spanish, and he told the coaches. And it happened, if I'm not mistaken, in the Padre organization back in the day. However, that guy also went on to become a big leaguer and played, you know, quite a few years. So I think it might be a little quick to say that he never plays again. I will share this with you. I got drafted in 2003 of June. June 2003. And remember, I had played a whole college season prior to that. So you roll into June, you finish the rest of the season. It's a lot of baseball for the first time you've ever played. And I will admit this. We got to the end of the season, and I was gassed. And I remember sharing with Prince. I remember Prince sharing with me, like, man, I do not want to go to the playoffs. I'm ready to go home. But once the game started, your competitive juices flow. And the last thing you want to do is be making outs on purpose. No matter how tired and much I wanted to go home, once they laced them cleats up, all that went away, and we ended up as much as we didn't want to go, we ended up going all the way to the championship before we lost. So, you know, that thought is not one that is, especially for guys in their first year, as this guy was, is not one that is a rarity. However, to then actually go through with those thoughts is a completely different thing. And, I mean, how stupid do you have to be? And I'm being honest, like, you worked your rear end off to be a sixth-round pick. You got six figures out of working your rear end off to possibly be a big leaguer one day, only to then risk throwing it away because you couldn't play an extra, I don't know, another month of the season, maybe. It's beyond just dumb. But I only said that because that this has happened to.
I mean, I do understand the psychology of it, but what I don't understand is following through on it.
Exactly, like, It's we all have thoughts that are fleeting and are unacceptable and or you know, spur of the moment.
Yeah, when the guy walks in front of you in the crosswalk and you go, you know, maybe I'll just knock this guy off here.
Exactly.
Oh, man,
we don't follow through with it, right?
Yeah,
like.
Right.
I think that's kind of the point here.
It's a daydream.
Yeah. I totally get being tired. I've been there. I was there. But, you know, once I got to the field and I put the cleats on, I'm like, and it's time to get in the on-deck circle. Like, oh, okay, yeah, no, I ain't going out like that. Like, you ain't – I'm not just going to make out. Like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it even if I wanted to.
I want to hear from those opposing hitters when they're like, did you say curveball? Okay.
Be a little surprised.
Yeah, that would be surprising. Wow. Did not expect for that to be the reason. Yeah.
If this guy takes one more step slower across this crosswalk, that's it.
I'm pushing him into traffic.
Oh, yes. I've thought that way too many times, guys.
Number two.
Like, I mean, we've all had somebody cut you off, and you'd be like, oh, I just want to run right into the back of this guy's vehicle. Yeah. But you don't do it.
Yeah, if you had a, that's when you want to have a rental car.
You want to have either a grill or a rental car. Yeah.
And then what you do is you follow them home, and then you sit outside their house for a little bit, and then you tell them that
you extrapolate this all the way out.
Never mind. That's not what I do, everybody. This is also a bad story. Georgia cornerback Daniel Harris became the latest Bulldog to be arrested for driving violations last night. He was cited for numerous offenses, including having no proof of insurance, materials that reduce visibility on his windows or windshield, driving without a seatbelt, having an unregistered vehicle, and reckless driving. He was released shortly before midnight after posting $10 bail on each of those charges. Per the incident report obtained by the Athens Banner-Herald, he was cited for going over 100 miles an hour while passing two other cars in the rain. So this is not the first time a Georgia football player has been in trouble for driving-related incidents. Since offensive lineman Devin Willock and recruiting staffer Chandler LaCroix were killed in a street racing-related crash in January 2023. Over 25 people from the program have been arrested or cited for driving-related offenses. Tony, I didn't really know what to ask here, but are the collective incidents going to be a stain on head coach Kirby Smart's legacy?
Yes, they are going to be. Just ask Urban Meyer, right? He had all those incidents. It kind of got pushed under the rug at Florida. Then he went to the next place, and it seems like it started up there as well. you know, I think these things can have a lasting effect if there's no change, right? I mean, I use Urban Meyer as an example because at Utah, it's pretty quiet. I can't remember very many incidents, if any, there. But went to Florida, it started to pile up. Then he went to Ohio State, and more things started to pile up. And what it seems like is if you're not careful and you're having the type of success that these coaches have, some of the things like this fall through the cracks early. And then they become bigger issues, right? Or you start to have bigger issues. And then it's tough to kind of rebound from that. I think after Urban left Utah, it went what, Florida, the Ohio State, and then the Jags were the last kind of straw. Did he coach anywhere else in between there that I'm missing?
I don't think so.
Wasn't he with like Youngstown?
No, he started his career at Bowling Green.
Bowling Green, yeah. That's it.
Ahead of Utah.
So I mean, yes, these things can start to follow you. And 25 is, and they all seem. I mean, listen, you've already lost. There's already been two lives lost. Really under the watch of Kirby Smart, and then you have all of these repeated driving violations. I don't know what it is about the Bulldogs and driving. Somebody how are they getting licenses? Do they know how to drive?
Well, he didn't have one. Yeah.
No, they're not getting licenses, apparently.
No, he had no proof of insurance.
Seems like, you know, you have to start. Part of your job as a head coach, Chris and I have talked about this, is you also are molding or trying to mold young men to be productive citizens. And it's not that he's not doing that, but there are quite a few in his programs that are falling short of that. And so, you know, I'm all for guys making mistakes, but when it seems like a program is having the same mistakes over and over again that you don't see every program having, I think that's, you start to kind of, antennas start to kind of come out the head a little bit.
Chris, is this going to be a stain on Kirby Smart's legacy?
I think it's going to be part of it. You know, this is a bigger problem, obviously, than just Georgia. I can't believe that, you know, nobody gets arrested at any other school. Georgia is the most high-profile school, so yeah. That may have a little something to do with it. Henry Ruggs went to Alabama. Tyreek Hill drives like a maniac.
Oklahoma State.
Yeah, Oklahoma State. Who was the other guy I was thinking? Oh, the Rashi Rice last year. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, and that's football.
True.
But there's a lot of these athletes and people in general. I don't think everybody who whizzes by me at 120 miles an hour on the freeway is a pro athlete. So I shouldn't blame it all on pro athletes.
No?
You know, unfortunately, a lot of these people feel, you know, that they're indestructible, athletes or not. And obviously this kid is among those. If I was Kirby Smart, though, and I don't know that he's capable of this because he seems ultra, ultra, ultra competitive, but it's high time that he starts taking some of these guys down off the roster or at least out of playing time. You've got to threaten something that's going to mean something to these kids. And, you know, to get up there and say the next guy that gets pulled over for something, I don't care what the circumstance, you're not playing for five games. Again, it may not stop it, but that's the only thing I think he can do. And I don't know that he's done that.
Yeah. I think ultimately the same things that makes these guys great are the same things that can get them into trouble at mm-hmm. times. And you got to find a way to kind of harness that, if you will.
Yes.
Number one.
As I almost knocked my computer off the desk. Shohei Ohtani is 3 home runs and 2 stolen bases away from becoming the first player to ever go 50-50. And according to Brom Wachter, head of Modern Collectibles, he said the 50th home run ball could fetch upwards of $200,000. So people are paying a lot of money for these tickets in the outfield of these Dodgers games. Now, I'm not going to ask about the price of the ball or anything, but Chris, he's currently 3 home runs and 2 stolen bases, as I said. What does he finish with?
Well, he's still got a series in Colorado to end the season. So if it gets worrisome for him, he's got that as
a
fallback.
That's a good point.
His last 3 games. I think they also have one at home against them. A series at home. He's going to go 50. I think once he gets to 50 stolen bases, I think he's going to save his legs for the playoffs. I don't know that he'll push that unless it's something, you know, in a hit and run. So I wouldn't be surprised if he lands right on 50 stolen bases. But home runs, he's going over. He's going to hit 5 or 6 more. And it's going to be something we've never seen. And it's going to win him the MVP award. And he may not be the last guy to do it, but he's going to forever be the first to do it. And I even read something in the LA Times yesterday, guys, from our friend Bill Plaschke. And Plaschke gets out on the limb sometimes.
Yes, he does.
What's Plaschke had to say?
Plaschke's suggestion is if the Dodgers need three outs in the playoffs or World Series, it's high time for Shohei to start pitching again and get some key outs.
Interesting.
Apparently, he might be close enough to being able to do that.
He's throwing off the mound in the bullpen.
So, you know, maybe that's a weapon that the Dodgers still have that we don't know about. But I thought I'd bring it up.
Ooh.
But, yeah, he's going 50-50, and he deserves to do it. He's been absolutely incredible.
Tony, what does he finish with?
51-50.
Wow, just barely getting it.
Yeah, well.
I think you start to press when you know you have these things, and it usually prolongs these situations. So, yeah, I think it's 51-50. It'll probably be Homer 51, Bags 50. I think Chris is right. Once he gets to 50 bags, he might shut it down. But I do think for everybody who goes through these things, that pressure starts to mount. And there's going to be a Homer watch or a bag watch. It's going to be at the bottom of the screens. We're going to be, and I think as we get towards it, I think that's going to weigh on him. And so I think he'll get to it, but I think it won't be he won't blow the record out the door.
Understand one more thing about how hard it is to hit a home run. I mean, these guys make it look easy. Aaron Judge is not homered in 3 weeks.
That's exactly what they think of this.
And that's Aaron Judge.
Right.
So, you know, you can't. Bonds was the only guy I've ever seen who could do it, Tony, that says, you know, I feel like hitting a home run, and there it went. Otani, yeah, it's going to be tougher than maybe people think.
All right. That is it for the Big Five. We still have an hour and 15 minutes to go. It's a little bit of a later Gwynn and
Chris
today.
Let's go.
So I don't know what's going to happen in the final hour.
Bring something to the table, will you?
Me?
You.